So Razor, you know, all last week I was when the Bruins were taking their 5-day league imposed siesta, so to speak, which it really wasn't, but I was at the NHL Network and I get a call one afternoon from Jake, from my son. He's like, "Dad, you got my skate." I said, "What's up?" You know, and he says, I need the edge. It's lost. Like I need it." I said, "Well, go sharpen your skates, right? I'll talk you through." "No, you need to do it." I said, I can't. I'm in Secaucus, New Jersey. And if you've ever been to Secaucus, you don't want to leave Secaucus, right? And so I said, "Buddy, I can't. I'm working." I said, "I'll have mom do it." No, you've got to do it." I said, "No, I'll have mom do it, all right?" So I talk him off the hockey skate ledge, so to speak, for his edge. And Razor, would you know it? Victoria pulled it off beautifully. You know why? Because the Sparks is that easy to use. We did a FaceTime. I told her what to do. After setting it up, hit it two passes, and holy smokes, the skate was perfect. Razor, that's the beauty of the Sparks right there.
It is. It's a no-brainer. It's an absolute no-brainer. And I know Vic is smarter than all of us combined. So it would have been very, very easy for her, much more so than Jake. But Jake could do it too. So that's it. It's that good. Anybody playing hockey, and it's not a sell job. It's an automatic holiday gift for anybody who is playing hockey, who's sharpening skates, who drives 5 miles at the last second to get their skate sharpened. It's a no-brainer. It's the best. It's the best hockey thing I have.
It is. It's the best thing, and right now is the perfect time to order your Sparks. Go to the Sparks website, and you use the code MORNINGBREW at checkout, and you will get free shipping. You will save that. Fully in stock, same-day shipping. Beat the holiday rush and get your Sparks skate sharpener today. It worked. Jake said nothing after that because his skates
were perfect. And he was plus five on the weekend. And he was plus five on the weekend.
Well, now we're in fantasy land, but let's go check out your Spark skate sharpener. And we appreciate Spark's support for this episode of Morning Brew. All right, well, in sports, there are good losses, bad losses, and I think then there's a classification of a third type that have just losses that not much, it's not that you can't do much about, but you just lose. The good loss, as we welcome you into Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor. Razor, the good loss is the one where you do everything well, you don't get puck luck in hockey, or you play a good team and they just are good enough. You know, they do the thing. The bad loss is when you face somebody that you could or should beat. You don't put forth enough of an effort. You make a lot of mistakes. And you lose a game that, again, you shouldn't. Bad loss. A loss when you just get beat. That's what this game against Calgary felt like to me. That the better team beat you. Your top guys got outplayed by their top guys. But more than just that, it was an overall statement by Calgary. The end of a 7-game roadie, they weren't going to be denied. They were going to finish it the right way. And your team, your home team, couldn't muster enough collectively. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, Bud, that they didn't try. But they tried, but they couldn't get anything accomplished, really, against them. And so I think there before you just say, they got beat by a better team, just like they got beat by a better team against Carolina before earlier this year.
And just like they got beat by a better team than the New York Islanders in the playoffs last fall, whenever it was. I can't keep track of the seasons when that was. But that driving home thinking about it, that's kind of, they have to get better. Their losses have been against good teams, which, half glass full that I usually am, is a good thing. Mm-hmm. At this time of year, if you're losing to good teams, that's a positive because you can grow, you can get better, you can learn from it. They've beaten the teams they're supposed to at this point, but certainly they've, you look at Carolina, Florida, Edmonton to a certain degree, that doesn't feel the same as this one, and Calgary beat them flat out, really, you know, would have had everything to go perfectly well tonight for them to get that win. And Calgary wasn't going to be denied. So they got some room. They have to get to the next level against these better teams. So they've got to get better.
How did they get so at times outplayed? Was it just the effort of Calgary? Was it how Calgary defended? I don't know. I'm trying to put my finger on it. What was it? Was it just one of those games where Calgary just wanted it more? Boy, that's a very general statement question.
I know
it is. But was that it? Was it because? Well, I think actually, personally, I'm going to answer it real quick. Some of it, Razor. I think there were certain facets that I think Calgary's defense, for instance, I think they were more involved than the Bruins did. They got pucks through. They owned the puck at the blue line. They didn't hesitate. You and I were talking about that during the game, working together on Nesson. I think that was a difference. I felt like Calgary really collapsed, and they were not trapping and standing back. I mean, they just suffocated the Bruins with great presence, stick work, et cetera, in the neutral and in the D zone. But am I missing anything? Was there anything more than that, how they just flat out beat the Bruins?
Well, I think no, you're not missing it. You hit the nail on the head. I think that, you know, you have a Hanifin goal. That's a defenseman play. You get the play out. That's a typical, and we do it often. I think I do it often because just the Bruins have been able to play this way, it feels like, for 6 years, that exact game that Calgary just played, where they go out on the road, they get a early goal. They stick to their game. They play discipline. Then they get a face-off play goal. Then they get a shorthanded goal from Brad Marchand in the third to break the game open, and it's over. It was methodical. It was discipline. It was patient. And I saw the one comment from Cassie. We didn't hear it on Nesson, but I saw it on the way home, that the big guys – the first line played a stubborn game, mm-hmm. and they were trying to force it. They were trying to go cross ice. And you think about, there were quite a few plays where we said to each other, they got to funnel that puck to the net. And instead they were trying to make a cross east-west play. And Calgary gives you the illusion that you have more room than you do. And those plays aren't there. And I think that is a long way to get to your question, is that I think at times they just didn't play simple enough, and we've seen them do that at times, but they get away with it. But against these better teams, they have to play more discipline and recognize that they're just not going to get away with the David Pastrnak 65-footer one-timer every single time.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring up, you know, the face-off play that Calgary scores on a Noah Hanifin goal. I'll give Noah Hanifin credit. He did look better. He looked better. He looks mature. Now, I know that happens to all, well, in theory, it happens to all players, right? They finally fight, but he was a little, he wasn't that impactful for a while, I felt, for as high a pick and as much potential as he had. I thought he looked much more confident, much more secure in his game and his execution in this one. But it's interesting you bring up that face-off play, because I'm thinking, remember we were going to show, we didn't get to it on Nesson in the intermission, first intermission, the three chances in a row the Bruins had on the face-off plays. Well, Calgary, the Flames, they knew exactly what the Bruins were going to do. Exactly. At least thinking over that. Like they marked them beautifully. They were prepared for it. They had their marks done. Meanwhile, the Calgary does their one play and the Bruins just can't pick up on it right there. Maybe it's because there's a bigger book, so to speak, more, you know, there's more history of the Bruins making these plays. But I think that kind of epitomized the game too, just about how Calgary was able to accomplish that. And I got to tell you something, I don't remember Calgary accomplishing anything like that last year. I feel like that's a new wrinkle in their arsenal.
No question. It is a new wrinkle. And that those plays, they're subtle and but within a back-to-back kind of game that it was tonight, Sunday night, that's the spark the Bruins needed that they didn't get and that they typically get. And think if you know, you play it back and you play it hindsight, the Bruins get one of their plays off the face off in the first period, then it's 1-1, then you're coming out of it and everything's good. Then maybe they score on the power play. There's just lots of ways this game typically goes differently, or we've gotten used to it in that winning way that the Bruins do. But right now, and certainly Sunday night, the winning team wasn't the Bruins. And it was because of those things that we just talked about. And a faceoff play is one of them. That's a big play in the game that changes everything. The next goal. That's what they're talking about on the benches, right? You hear that. It's all right, boys. Next goal's big. Both teams are saying that at 1-0 after the first period. Both teams are saying it with 10 minutes left in the second period. Next goal's big.
What was bigger, that second goal or that third goal after the Bruins top guys again are on the ice on the power play, making a Patrice Bergeron, who you cannot say this often, but did not have a good game. Makes a bank pass, I think, thinking that he was going to have support, obviously, of if not one, two of his teammates coming up the ice. And away goes Mangiapane down the side, who, by the way, if you get a chance, watch what Mangiapane does, folks. If you watch the play, he gets bumped. Is it McAvoy? I believe it's McAvoy. And he uses the boards to actually catapult himself to go more. See, a lot of young players think they hit the boards and they go into it. He actually used the boards and kept going. It was really, it's a heady play. You almost use it as a bit of a boomerang off there. But he keeps going. And then not one, not two, not three, but the fourth opportunity after Swayman had made a couple of saves goes in for a shorty. Which one do you think was a bigger, or I guess in the Bruins case, tougher, more impactful goal in the loss?
Well, I the second one for me, because this team just not giving up goals. They weren't going to give up three goals. But the third goal is a dagger, both to the power play, to the morale of the team. You could have, it probably would have stayed 2-0, and people would have been in the building. They might have had a few chances. Maybe they get it to 2-1. 3-0. I mean, I said it at 3. I thought they were going to get 5 or 6.
Razor did say that. He said this has got 5-0 written.
Yeah, and it just right away, as soon as that happens, the game's completely over.
Right.
So I think the 2-0, that's a big one. They needed to get that goal to go 1-1, but that 3-0 is bad for the power play. It's bad for the first line. It's bad for the guys on the ice, and it was demoralizing to everybody and makes this that loss that you're talking about. I think if this game ended 2-0 or 2-1. And they hit the post three times in the third period, then you would have been like, they were right there. This goes the other way, and that's what the third goal did to that.
Yeah, I agree. The third goal is the kick in the you-know-what, in the gotchkes. You know, that's just
it's a kick. Yeah. It was awful.
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah, you know, for a while, there was only 30 shots in the game combined, and I think that was with 8 minutes left in the second period. And then all of a sudden it became more and more, and the Flames just really started to take over the game, and they're checking their consistent effort. They're
being
reads.
On the road. They're comfortable. They've been comfortable in that.
Yeah.
It felt like the Bruins wanted to, you know, had that home.
Yeah. We're going to be okay type thing. And then, oh no, we're not. There's something, you know, and it's, I think it's a valid quick discussion too. There's something glorious about being on the road as a team that is confidence building. And then there's it's the us against the world, you know, mantra. You know, it's that feeling of we're going to walk into the Boston, you know, we're going to walk into TD Garden, just like we walked into the Islanders the night before, their brand new building. And we know, even though we really don't have a rivalry with the Islanders, we know that the whole hockey world, or the Islanders hockey world, is focused on this euphoric night. Well, what we're here for now is to steal that feeling from you. And then they say, hey, we're going into the Garden, one of the great places. Let's go into the Garden. You know what? Let's finish with our fourth win on the road. They went 4-1-2 after this. And what a it's us against the world. It's something that you can't explain, I think, to some people if they haven't experienced it. But that mentality and that vibe raiser, I think, does an awful lot for a team that's confident.
Oh, it's so there's nothing more fun in the National Hockey League than going on a 7-game road trip and going 4-1-2. Mm-hmm. There is nothing better in the entire season until playoff time for the Calgary Flames. They're not going to match the feeling they have tonight and the feeling they've had the last 10 days on the road together. You're having fun, you're winning, you're hanging out together. Now you fly home, you're laughing, you're joking. It will not get better for the Calgary Flames now until the playoffs, assuming they'll be in the playoffs, because it's the best feeling to go on a road trip and win more than lose, and you're with everybody, you're hanging out, and you're confident in each other. It's so much fun. It really is.
And it's empowering for a team. It gives you so much confidence, and the purpose of you're walking into the pit and everybody's just one, you know what I mean? They're just on top of you. And you're like, boys, it's 20 of us. Let's go. It's a great feeling. It's hard sometimes to explain, but it's a great feeling. It's more than a challenge. Again, it's empowering. So, you know, listen, this isn't a Flame show, but good for them. They're better than I thought they would be. They are. They are a better team than I thought they'd be. They're deep. They got Monahan playing third line. And then, you know what? He should be playing third line.
Really, right? And also to have Sutter actually coaching them and them actually responding to Sutter is kind of shocking to me. He's an old school guy. We've talked a lot. I mean, everyone talks a lot about how the game's changed and these old school guys can't be in the game anymore, these coaches. But this guy's as old school as anybody, and he's getting them to respond. It's something.
Well, he did it twice in L.A., in 12 and in 14. They brought in, I don't know if it was him or they brought in Kirk Muller as the associate head coach, who I know pretty good. He's incredibly well received by players.
Yeah, he's the good cop in that bad cop, good cop relationship. But don't forget, like 2012 and 14 is so long ago, right? That was when you won 2-1. You could still win games, you know, with LA. They gave up 2 goals every series. It was crazy what they were doing then. He's got them buying in, and I'm sure Kirk's a big deal too.
But he's got two good goalies. We'll start with Jacob Markstrom. We're not going to talk about him. But he's a great goalie. But he wasn't great last year. Now, they were exposed more last year. And, you know, and they and bring COVID. In Sutter and COVID. Right. But they bring in Sutter. Darryl has got them tighter. It's funny. You know, I know he's a win by a goal type of guy, but he's allowing his D to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, Shillington, Hanifin, these guys are giddy up and go guys. And
you go back to 12, you Doughty, and, you know, he's had these guys that run and gun. You're right. Yeah, it's interesting. And the makeup's the same as those teams.
Yeah,
very, exactly. Very similar, where you have skill, they have tough guys, they have old guys,
they have a better mix than the Bruins do.
They
do. They have a better, because, you know, you can argue top line is top line, even though we know the Bruins top line got outplayed. They have a fourth line of some toughness. I've always been a Richardson fan. He is what he is, but he knows his role. You got a guy like
from Lucha Belleville, Ontario.
There you go. There you go.
My hometown. Good friend of mine.
And then you get Luch. Ray Richardson's had a long career. He has just stuck around.
And he won those cups with Sutter in LA. Yeah. He's on both of those cup teams.
So right.
He's a Sutter advocate.
But their second and third lines are better than the Bruins right now. It feels that way. At least they're accomplishing.
Their D is
the big difference. Yeah. All right, so how many people you think in the Bruins world are saying, oh, my God, we should have kept Dan Vladar? We should have kept Dan, you know, Vladar.
Let's say 36% of them, 37% of them.
Okay. That's, I feel like that might be a little low, but, you know, I think, first of all, great kid. Just got to know him a little. Talked to him a handful of times during his time with the Bruins. Well-liked, very well-received in the room. He looks good. I think it's an advantage, big advantage for him being a backup versus having to play every other game. If he played every other game for the Calgary Flames, I'm not so sure we see the same thing. And that is not a knock at the kid at all. That's just where he is in his game. He's also learning from another goaltender who is the same size, if not a teeny bit bigger than him. So he gets to see an awful lot then. I think that's big. But Dan Vladar played very well. But I got a hunch there's an element of Bruins fans that are saying, ah, we should have kept him. We should have. Revisionist history.
There's some nervousness.
Yeah.
Or even, you know what's even worse? You know what's even worse that's being said is that we should have went with Swayman and Vladar. Look at this guy.
Well,
we could have went with both
of
these guys. No. It doesn't work that way, gang. It doesn't work that way.
They'd been playing every other game then. I mean, you know, it's different than what he's seeing. And again, the D in front of him is different.
Yeah, the team's perfect for him. He's got no pressure on him whatsoever. It's not even worth conversing about. The reality is Dan Vladar got very fortunate that he's landed on his feet in a good spot. And his career is going to, you know, if he has the season that he started, he's going to end up being a starting goalie in the National Hockey League somewhere. It won't be in Calgary because Markstrom's there for five more years. Mm-hmm. He will get an opportunity somewhere else. So good for him. But it wasn't that it's apples and oranges comparing the situation that he's in Calgary to what's going on here. He been Swayman and Vladar, that's nuts.
Right. That's a whole different scenario. That's a whole different style, whole different expectation.
Oh, alone, man.
Right there.
Yeah.
So Philadelphia, the team that the Bruins beat on Saturday night.
Yeah, let's get to we didn't talk about that one. That was a good one.
Right. Well, before we get to that, and I do want to real quick. So Philly ends up beating Calgary a few games ago in overtime. But yet then the Bruins took it to Philadelphia pretty good on Saturday night in that win 5-2. I mean, it's one of those things. How do you explain it? I mean, was it the fact that Calgary just had a really good time in Philadelphia on their night off? because, you know, I mean, and let me ask you this. Is Boston that much better than Philadelphia? Or was Philadelphia just up for Calgary? I'm throwing all this out there. The point is that it shows that not anybody can beat anybody. I don't know if I firmly believe that regularly. I don't think Arizona is going to regularly win games, right, in the league, for instance.
No. They stink.
They stink, right. They're going to win here. But teams can, you know, I mean, I thought Calgary looked great. Meanwhile, they lose to Philadelphia, and I thought the Bruins handled Philadelphia pretty darn well on Saturday night.
I think that's a great way to say that the Bruins and the Philadelphia Flyers and maybe even Tampa right now are the three they're very, very similar in that you're going to get – they're still trying to figure it out. They're still trying to get their feet under them in this season. And certainly the Philly-Bruin comparison that you've just made, that they seem like the same teams to me. Not perfect, but definitely can put the hammer down. They can beat any team, but also feel like they're not consistently going to be the top team. And it's just a good example of the NHL and it's difficult and every night's different and every night presents its own challenges. So, you know, you can easily talk about the Bruins playing a back-to-back, being on the road. So they leave Friday. They come back late Saturday. They wake up Sunday morning, and their kids can't wait to see them. They're running around the house. Everybody's at the house. They probably have to do groceries or get a few errands done. Then they have to go play Sunday night. And we talked about it when we get in the building. It feels like Sunday night. You can trick yourself all you want, but it's Sunday night. There's football on TV.
Yeah,
that's harder to play that game at home. than it is on the road. When you're on the road, like Calgary, so there's nuances to every single one of these situations. But just for everyone to think about it, think about what it would have been like for a guy who has kids to get back after not seeing them for 2 days, to wake up Sunday morning when they're not going to school, they're hanging around the house all day, everyone's you're having lunch with the kids, and then you have to go play the game that night. Those things add into what NHLers are dealing with rather than being on the road. So you can use that as just that goes to how every one of these games, when you're middle of the pack, those little things make a difference. Yeah. Now, that doesn't matter for Arizona. It probably doesn't matter for Carolina right now, but it does matter when you're Philadelphia and in Boston on a day-to-day basis playing the better teams.
Yeah. Does it bother you as a former player that there's an element of people that you just spoke with or spoke to, you know, as a podcaster here, that say, I don't give a shit about that, man? Meaning, they're at home, they got the kids, they got this, they got that. Now they got to go out and play. That shouldn't be a big deal because it's just a hockey game. Does that bother you? Or having been through it, you don't care? Meaning, what I'm getting at is there's a human element to all of this that we just don't take into consideration. People don't. I know it because sports are treated differently than every other business out there, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. They are because it's emotional.
Yeah, no, I don't think guys take offense to it. I just think that it is something that gets too easily overlooked. Mm-hmm. And we do all this analysis, right? We've got analytics coming out of our yin yangs with Corsi and puck possession and all these things, but we want to easily disregard something like just being at home.
The human element.
Let's come back and talk about Calgary's just had a 7-game road trip. I don't know when their game is at home. I bet they struggle their next game.
Well, Wednesday. Tuesday, I beg your pardon. I think they fly home tonight and they have tomorrow off. And they either play Tuesday or Wednesday. It's going to be a tough turnaround.
That's always a really hard game. You get home, you haven't seen all of these things. It certainly presents different challenges. So yeah. It's something that shouldn't be overlooked in the analysis. I think that's the one thing I would say is that it can't be disregarded. I get it. They have to go out and perform, but it's just part of the deal.
I wonder if anybody's ever done a study on guys that come home without kids after a long road trip and guys that come home with kids after a long road trip, and which one has more legs by that next game. And you can tell
what the numbers say.
Right. What do the numbers say? Because you can lose your legs in different ways. The girlfriends.
Yeah, I know. The guys that came on the girlfriends could be just as much. Yes. The single guys could have more of issues as well in different scenarios. But again, for the most part, wives are more than happy to give the kids up to any of these guys, as supportive as they are after a 10-game road trip. Yes. Here you go. I don't care if you have practice.
All right, I'm not finding any positives here. I'm just saying what was good. Anton Bleed in the fourth line was good. Anton Bleed in particular. Tomáš Nosek has been very instrumental to being that bedrock of the fourth line, but I will say that I thought that I noticed Anton Bleed a lot more in Sunday's game. Saturday's game, we noticed all of the fourth line. They were great. Jakub Zboril, good, I thought. I gotta be honest with you. Saturday was very good. Sunday, I think like the rest of the Bruins, they were okay. He was fine back there. Mm-hmm. Nothing that was egregious. So I thought Forbert struggled a bit in the Sunday game. Versus the Saturday game, I thought he definitely struggled. Was it just tired or just matchups? I'm not sure. But the biggest glaring weakness again was the Bruins' top line. We can't say that often. I thought for a while, it's funny. I thought for a while in the Sunday game, I thought Taylor Hall was noticeable. We talked about him after one. I can't tell you, I thought the second and third period he was as noticeable. Am I missing anything there?
No, they had a good. The second line had a really good shift in the second period, but then it kind of went away. So they were kind of just middle of the pack, right? Mm-hmm. Like they were okay. I thought that, again, to your point, Bleed was the star of the game.
Yeah.
And you think about his position where he is, he can put his head on his pillow tonight and, you know, he's got to get back to work. He's in the position the team can't lose too much. He's still based off result. Like the team loses, he's the one coming out. You know, he's in that spot. So that makes him a little nervous, but he knows he did his job. Zboril, couple giveaways, just needs a bounce back. He's going to need to go back to a great game. He's going to get another opportunity, I got to imagine. He didn't do anything so egregious that he has to be taken out.
Yeah,
but that's that one game where you drop off a level, you have to get right back to where it was against Philadelphia the night before. So this Wednesday night's a big Zboril game if you're pulling for him, because he can't have two in a row. This is what we've been talking about, where he needs to be great for this month. You do get great doesn't mean every single shift, every single second. It means throughout the week. Every week you have to be great.
Collective effort of your games. Let me see. What else? Anything else stand out from that game?
The other quick thing. Let's just. So now, what do we do with goaltending? What does that do?
You're going back to Allmark for sure. Absolutely. Okay, this is good because I was going to.
Does he go again? That's where I'm wondering. Does he?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
I've already thought about that. Funny, it's at the end of the game. Thinking about as my preparation is so intense, and I'm thinking in between. You know, I'm kidding. We don't really prepare for this. I'm thinking, like goaltending discussion would, and I said, you know what? Ullmark, we know, is going to play in Buff. Ullmark wins and he looks good in Buff. I'd be shocked, in fact, if he doesn't play on Friday.
You have to give him the marquee game on Friday too.
Absolutely. Yeah. You have to. And that would only be the right thing for him and the team. And especially if you want, quote unquote, somebody to take the net, you know, take over the net. Swayman, in my eyes, wasn't bad. I know you said. I remember.
Well, the fourth goal did suck too.
Yeah.
Right. If that had been, you know, we forget about it because the game was over. But that, you know, the squeaker
threw him. A problem. I know you talked earlier, Bud, during the Nesson telecast about the rebounds. You know, they weren't this, they weren't that, but they weren't bad, but they weren't. I understand we have to box out, we have to, you know, pick sticks, all that stuff. But you know. I thought the second one, you said during the show, he wasn't expecting Hanifin to come in, but I guess, is it unfair for me to ask him to punch that one out or no? Like to really punch that?
No, it isn't. It isn't. You're right. He wasn't ready for the shot and he put the rebound. I mean, that's why Hanifin went there, because that's where the bad rebound's supposed to go. The good goalie is supposed to put that somewhere else, right?
Do you think that
I think it's,
is there a book on Swayman on that? Do you think, is that like a something that the Flames saw, or is there not enough of that yet? Is that not a tendency of his, I guess is what I'm asking.
I don't think so yet, but the big one is the book gets bigger now because of it, right? So if you, it might not have been there prior, but whoever is the next team that he plays against is going to have those two games on the clips, or those two goals. This is a rebound guy. Look at how he comes out and is really aggressive. Let's get pucks on. You know, the other game he didn't play great was Philly. He had a couple leaky ones underneath his arms, and he had two rebound goals that came off of him and went off to the side. So the book is now, all right, 7-hole, 8-hole, look under his arms, shoot it in there, and get it off his pads, and look for the rebound 10 feet off the play. Mm-hmm. So the book's building, right? So you have to start making adjustments at this point.
Okay, well. Something to watch. All right. So the Bruins lose 4-0 to the Calgary Flames, the second time this year that they have been shut out. The next game for the Bruins is on Wednesday, Thanksgiving Eve. in Buffalo, a 7 o'clock game. And hopefully they take it to the Buffalo Sabres, a team that I know started pretty well, Razor, but they're showing their weaknesses now. They're having the issues. They're goaltending. They're, you know, they're just not there just yet. But anyways,
let's see. Yeah, it'll be a good bounce back. The Bruins need a bounce back. Did you, back in the day, back in the old college days, when you go back and have the blowout Wednesday night, was that a thing for you? Because I know, like, I've heard about that. I didn't go to college, but I know everyone comes back, right?
Blowout
Wednesday night for like Thanksgiving, everyone's back for the holiday. Everybody from like your high school gets together and like from your town or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Is
that, but for a few years,
you had to play hockey though.
Right. So
you
were stuck. Would stay there. But we'd maybe have our own blowout, maybe, just hypothetically speaking.
You didn't get to go home involved.
No, but eventually after a few years, when I was done, I would go home and then there's a big session.
Definitely. Wednesday night's a big night, right?
Oh, big night.
For young people. For young people.
Big night. Yeah, it was, I'll see you in time for Thanksgiving, Ma, you know, type of thing. You know, especially for freshmen would be like they're regrouping with all their old high school buddies for the first time in years that they hadn't been around. As you got older, and again, for a couple of years, I would stay at school and we would go out and then we'd have Thanksgiving at like a they call them the Deakers at Michigan, the support people that would host you for Thanksgiving. And it was very nice. But anyways, you get older, you go back home, you hook up with a buddy or two, or, you know, maybe an old hookup type of thing, literally, figuratively type of thing. You find them there. You have some fun and you're thankful for that. So,
I love Thanksgiving.
Oh yeah.
I love that idea too. We didn't do that in Canada. So
it's good. It's good. It's a fun time. I'm looking forward to it. I have family coming to town. I know that you're going to spend some time with family. So the next brew is going to be recorded, not after the Buffalo game or the Ranger game. It is going to be recorded after the Vancouver game, so 1 week from tonight. And I'm trying to make sure that I've got that right, because God knows that I can screw things up mightily. But we're not going to do it after Buffalo. The Ranger game, I'm going to be at. We're not working. It's a 1 o'clock game on ABC, but I'm going to be at, and then we got stuff afterwards. So we're going to do the next brew after the Vancouver game. Of course, if something happens big, we will do something if need be. Otherwise, we'll catch you. Am I right on that? Is that in your notes too, or did I screw that up? No.
Yeah, that's right. We had 28th or 30th on the calendar. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. It's the 28th. I think we're doing a show on the 28th, and then we're going to do one on the 30th. Yep. I think as well. All right, that's going to wrap this one up. So the Bruins have a decent weekend, at least to begin. They win 5-2. Not so great to end. They lose 4-0. Let's see how they respond in a couple of days when they take on the Buffalo Sabres. Razor, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I'm sure I will speak with you off the air, so to speak. Have a wonderful time. Everybody out there, enjoy Morning Brew. And as always, please, despite the loss, enjoy your coffee.